look at the U.S. economy now from a corner office executive at one of the biggest U.S. companies with a name known the world over, Ford. Once upon a time, the U.S. economy was the auto, steel, and heavy manufacturing industries. The Ford River Rouge manufacturing plant in Detroit was the envy of the world in the 20th century. In a very different U.S. economy in this century, though, the auto industry is a very different kind of economic indicator. It tracks the resurgence of U.S. manufacturing. It is also a sign of economic health in the consumer sector, and it is a surprisingly big part of the U.S. export economy. Joe Hendricks is basically responsible for half the planet as president of the Americas for the Ford Motor Company. Welcome, Joe.
Hey, John, good to see you.
It's great to talk to you, and certainly there were a lot of smiles on the faces of Ford executives during the terrible economic downturn that Ford really escaped because of some serendipitous decisions that were made before the financial meltdown. How's Ford doing right now, and is it the same company today that it was 10 years ago?
Well, I think it's a very different company. We came through the financial crisis and our own restructuring a much stronger company. If you look at 2013 here in North America, we had record profits of $8.8 billion. Our dealers had record profits. And importantly, then we were able to share that with growth with our employees who also had record profit sharing. And we've hired about 14,000 people the last 2 years here in the United States. So our business is growing. We're much stronger financially, and we're hiring again. So it's great to see the restructuring worked.
Joe, 50 years ago, Ford made a huge bet on the Mustang, and it paid off, better than anything since the Model T or Model A, I believe. Can Ford make that kind of a bet, take that kind of a risk today?
Well, we can. The market's very different today. I mean, there's certainly many more competitors from all over the world, and certainly a proliferation of nameplates available to the consumer that there wasn't, 50 years ago. But we are taking pretty aggressive risks. I mean, I think the largest one going on at the moment is at the end of this year we'll be launching an all-new F-150 that's all aluminum on the body, the most aggressive use of aluminum by anyone in history on an automobile at the kind of volumes we do. So we're taking our highest volume product, the number one selling vehicle in the United States for the last 32 consecutive years, and we're going to make it all aluminum to take 700 pounds of weight out and make it more fuel efficient. So that's a kind of risk that's a new kind of risk in the environment we're in today. But you go back to 64 when the Mustang was launched, different era, dominated by GM, Chrysler, and Ford in the market here, and it really took the market by storm.
You know, back then, you were a Dodge person, you were a Chevy person, you were a Ford person, and that was the way it was. What were you?
Well, I was born in 66, so I wasn't around in 64. But my family grew up actually primarily Chevrolet and Buicks, actually. Now they've all transformed into Fords, thankfully. But we grew up a family with my dad, a company car, and their allegiance was to Buick, actually. And then my mom typically had a van because we had five kids. I'm the oldest of five. But if you go back, talking to my mom the other day, she remembers, I mean, most people do who were around in 64, who were old enough, remember the World's Fair here in New York and the introduction of Mustang. And the original projections were about 100,000 sales a year for the first 2 years, and then Ford ended up selling over a million.
Did you drive a muscle car? The Buick Skylark, I guess, would be the version of that late 60s, 70s car.
I had a Chevy Laguna S3 as my first car.
Whoa.
And it was a one-year run by General Motors from 76 and had a 350 V8 and had lots of power. It was a coupe, big coupe, and it didn't get me in too much trouble, but it had the potential to do so.
And had a carburetor before fuel injectors, right?
Yeah, different time. A lot of, we were always opening that hood to make sure everything was okay.
And would you say the culture of GM, and you've had experience at GM, is fundamentally different from the culture of Ford? This is kind of a sensitive subject, but describe it. There's a change of leadership over at GM. There's about to be a change of leadership at Ford.
Well, they're very different companies. I worked for GM for 10 years, but I left in 98, so it's been a while since I was there. And I've worked for Ford for 13 years. The cultures are different. They've historically been different. We've benefited the last eight years of continuity of leadership under Alan Mulally as our CEO, and a number of our other key executives have been a part of that leadership team for that whole time period. So I think we've benefited from that continuity of leadership and our focus on our One Ford plan. It's been so long since I left General Motors, it's hard for me to talk about, GM's culture because I wouldn't know it. But we really are focused on working together, transparency, risk-taking in a way that is transparent and open and acknowledged by everybody, and a supporting environment.
The companies, Toyota and General Motors, are dealing with very serious recalls and some safety issues right now. Why has Ford seemed to have avoided the recall problem? Is it just a matter of luck? Is this the kind of thing we're going to expect all companies to be dealing with as we go forward? Or is there some strategically different approach on the part of Ford?
First of all, you know, all manufacturers have recalls, and certainly we're not perfect. There's a lot more data available to all of us today than there was even 10 years ago when it comes to timeliness of data from our information from our dealers, from our warranty systems, from the internet, from social networks, et cetera. That's impacting things. There's also a lot more data available to NHTSA and to other government agencies that help us deal with these issues. And the vehicles are far more complicated than they used to be. I mean, I was an engineer working on analog brakes in the late 80s. That was a new technology. I mean, now we have, you know, driver assist technologies. We have cruise control that's adaptive, that adjusts the vehicle on its own. We have all these new technologies. And so the vehicles are becoming much more sophisticated. And so I think you are going to continue to see a high number of recalls because, one, we have more information. We can act more quickly. And two, the vehicles are a lot more complicated.
So Joe Henricks is the president of the Americas for the Ford Motor Company, which means your territory is from northern Canada to where?
All the way down to Chile and Argentina.
All right, Joe, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.